The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Sex Out Loud is sponsored by Lilo, award-winning designers of the world's best pleasure objects.
Smart, sexy, kinky, fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome, everyone, to Sex Out Loud. I have such a good show lined up for you. Hey, I want to remind you that we now have this 24-hour voicemail line where you can call in and ask us your questions, leave comments about shows that you've heard, and generally do anything except, you know, drunk dial us. 323-SEX-8266 is the number, 323-SEX-8266. And I've been telling you about this Explore More Summit that I'm a part of. Well, my interview with its creator, Dawn Sarah, airs tomorrow, February 6th. And we will tweet out the link to that. It's a pretty good one. Dawn drew out some funny things for me, and I've been posting little quotes from it. So it should be funny. And want to tell you about some events, again, if you haven't heard already. April 14th to the 17th, I am going to be emceeing at International Ms. Leather and Ms. Bootblack 2016. It's in San Jose, and you can register at imsl.org. Also, Poly Dallas, where I'm keynoting July 22nd to the 23rd, has changed the name of the symposium to Designer Relationships, which is very exciting and pays homage to Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson's book of the same name. And I'm really excited about that because I'm going to Texas. I haven't been there for years. And registration is finally open for my sex educator boot camp, which is going to be at Woodhull's Sexual Freedom Summit in August in DC. There are two ways to register because this time, unlike other times, you can go to my boot camp without going to the event. So if you're going to Woodhull and my boot camp, you get special pricing. And there's one link to follow to do that. And if you want to come to my boot camp, but you're not coming to the summit, there's another link to do that. We're going to put all that on our Twitter feed. And remember, you have a few days left to get in on this Lilo contest where they're giving away a Tiani 24K and a Tux. That's hashtag Tux. And all you have to do is look for my tweet about it. They come once a day. And all you have to do is follow them and retweet my tweet for a chance to win. Okay, let me tell you about tonight's guest. Willie Wilkinson, MPH, is an award-winning Asian-American transgender writer, public health consultant, cultural competency trainer, public speaker, and spoken word performer. He's the author of the new book, Born on the Edge of Race and Gender, A Voice for Cultural Competency, which illuminates trans experience within a Chinese-American cultural framework and transforms the memoir genre into a cultural competency tool. a dynamic and engaging speaker who's recognized widely for his expertise on transgender issues. Willie has provided training and consultation services for hundreds of community health organizations, educational institutions, and businesses on how to provide equal access for LGBTQ populations. Willie is the recipient of a National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association Award and the Transgender Law Center Vanguard Award, and is recognized on the Trans 100. He lives in Oakland, California, with his three vibrant young kids. Welcome to the show, Willie.
Oh, thank you so much. What a privilege to be on your show. Thanks so much for the invitation.
So let me tell people about this book first. Like its subject, who is a mixed-race transgender guy, this book refuses to be one thing. It mixes heartbreaking and uplifting memoir with a really accessible guide for folks about LGBTQ, trans, people of color. It's sort of gentle as an introduction, but it's also provocative and political and unapologetic.
Thank you for that.
I'm not even done. Okay. It's intersectional throughout, discussing the complexities of race, ethnicity, gender, and sexuality. And it covers a lot of ground. So, Willie, you have lived a life, or should I say lives, from Santa Cruz to Mexico City, the Bay Area, Boston, back to San Francisco. And that life has encompassed queer political activism, Asian Pacific Islander community organizing, HIV/AIDS outreach on the streets of the Tenderloin in San Francisco, illness and disability, gender transition, marriage, kids, a career as a public health consultant and trainer, an undying love of swimming, and even the PTA.
Yep, that's right. That's right. Thank you.
So part of me sort of doesn't know like where to begin, because there's so much ground covered in this book. It's kind of miraculous. Like, your head spins a little thinking of all these experiences that you had, and that you're able to kind of take us with you through so many of them in this book.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I want to start with your family of origin, because that figures highly in the beginning of the book. And your mom is Chinese, your father is white, and your childhood was often marked by your difference from those around you. Like, your dad took you shopping in the boys' department eventually, which was really affirming for you. But at the same time, these other relatives kept gifting you with dresses, and they sort of disregarded what seemed like a pretty clear gender identity in front of them at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And yet then there your parents are in their 80s and their 90s at the ceremony where you received the award from the Transgender Law Center. So
yes.
I'm wondering if you could reflect on what your parents gave you and what you learned from them and what you had to unlearn.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, my parents are in their late 80s and early 90s now. And because I'm old ass like that, because I was born in the early 60s. And, you know, I was a young trans child, even pre-verbal. You know, at age 4, deciding I wanted to be white and male, and I was going to work really hard towards that goal. And, you know, there was no cultural reference point for my parents in the 60s and 70s to understand me as a young trans child. You know, it wasn't easy in some ways, you know, to be different when, you know, as a young Asian female-born individual, I, you know, was expected to be a certain kind of female that I was never going to be. But, you know, I have to say, you know, it's amazing, you know, how far my parents have come and how wonderfully supportive they are to me now. To go to the event where I was, you know, awarded the Transgender Law Center, and, you know, them just being there and being present and proud was a wonderful feeling. You know, that for me, you know, was certainly a moment of family acceptance that felt really good.
And I was struck that you changed your name to Willie when you were 9 years old. Like, you started
yes.
telling people in your life, including teachers and friends and your family, That's really early. We don't think of that as early now, but I think back in the 60s, that seems really ahead of the curve.
Well, yeah, that was my name. And a lot of people resisted it. A lot of people taunted me with the girl name. But I said, oh, no, this is my name. And I told everybody that, and that I, you know, insisted that people call me that. And some people could get with it. There were a few teachers that could get with it and peers. It took my mother 15 years, but it was a celebration when she came around. And some of my other family members were able to get with it. There was no, support for kids at all, trans kids. Nobody was talking about trans kids, and there was no systemic support in the schools. And that's why I'm using my story to talk about this issue, because this is an ongoing issue for young trans kids, and I use it to talk about why we need trans-affirming schools. Because in so many states right now around the country, there are trans kids who are fighting for the right to be referred to appropriately and use the appropriate restroom. It's insane how many attacks are happening now against trans kids and their ability to just pee in peace. And so I just think, I need to talk about what my story was. And I have a certain grief that I didn't have the experience of, being supported as a young trans child, even if we have policies and legislation, kids are still being discriminated against. And so we really need to be talking about that.
I'm also, you talked about this. You talked about being bullied, and obviously that still goes on in schools. And people specifically tried to sort of demean or punish you by using your other name at school. And I'm wondering what it's like for you to experience elementary school through the eyes of your children, where there are like trans awareness trainings and they have gay straight alliances to look forward to in high school. I mean, it seems like a different world, and that must on some level feel good.
Well, kids they're not born with all that crap, right? They're so open-minded as young people, although they start to get indoctrinated very young in preschool and, all the cartoons and everything from a young age. But, I write about the experience of my son at the age of 4 asking me about my gender and, having a light bulb moment where he realized, oh, you're a transformer. And it was just like, wow, cool points, And it was a wonderful way of turning around a lifetime of being shamed for being who I am to just be like, well, he gets it, And my daughter's got a whole bed full of transgender stuffed animals, And, they have a sense of, okay, this is part of the fabric of our lives as, mixed heritage individuals and as, in a multicultural family structure, makeup, and also, as having a trans parent. But they also know that that their experience is somewhat unique, that they don't know a lot of people who have trans parents. And they know some kids who have lesbian parents, but they, in their school, but they're the only ones in their school with a trans parent. We started actually with Collage and Our Family Coalition, a support program for trans kids. Kids who have trans parents. The movement of trans-identified people who are becoming parents as trans-identified folks, as opposed to people who've become parents and then come out later as trans. The kids are much younger because it's really a movement that's in the early stages, and so most of the kids are young. In fact, a lot of the kids are under 5, and so it's a process of organizing support and being able to get folks together, given that so many of the kids are young. So anyway, it's certainly something that we talk about, and it just comes up randomly, and my daughter will start telling me about, one of her trans stuffed animals. And they all have their gender journeys, they all have their stories, which is great. Of course, most are FTM, most are female to male.
Oh my God.
But, there's a variation.
That's amazing. Okay, we need to take a break, but there's some amazing stories in this book about your kids, and they really are, wow, they just sound like really smart, self-aware kids.
Oh, thank you.
So we're going to hear more about that, but we've got to take a break. Coming up, more stories about Willie's kids, and we're going to get into some of my favorite parts of the book, because I had to choose people, because I can't go through the whole book. It's just that good. Okay, so stay with us. More after the break.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many, for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
No fluff, no lies, just real women talking real sex.
I am so bruised on my girl bits.
Sex gets real.
Sex gets so real.
So real up in here.
A weekly podcast with Dawn.
I just masturbated.
And Dylan.
Let's talk about the elusive clit.
Check them out on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and at sexgetsreal.com.
Cock rings.
Cock rings.
Streaming live. The leader in internet talk radio. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Willie Wilkinson, who's the author of the new book, Born on the Edge of Race and Gender, A Voice for Cultural Competency. It is an incredible book that I really recommend everyone read. And the thing is, because it sort of combines and defies genres, it's both a great book to read if you want to read about a Chinese American experience in San Francisco, if you want to read about a queer experience, if you want to read a trans memoir, but also if someone came to me and said, oh my God, I just found out that I know a trans person and I have no idea what to do with myself, I would actually give them this book because there's so much teaching in it and it's very, very accessible. So like the everyday person could pick it up and read it. And I think it would really, it would just help people as a kind of an intro. That's the thing. It sort of bounces back between this very like trans 101 and kind of, you know, intersectional politics 101. And then it goes much, much deeper and farther than even other trans memoirs. So you guys have to buy this book. We're going to tweet out the link. Okay.
Thank you for that. Thank you.
We
I appreciate your enthusiasm. Thank you.
Listen, we talked about your kids before the break and, I wanted you to share with us, you know, this is one of the interesting things is that you have three children and they've known from an early age that you are transgender, and how you navigate those waters is really fascinating. And I wanted you to share this story about being in the car with your son. So you're going to read a little bit from the book.
Okay, great. So this is called Transformer. I pulled into the driveway in my red-hot, middle-aged hoopty. Small and scuffed rough, with an inconsistent sheen, it had a ragged look that said nothing about its reliability as a mid-90s Honda Civic. But the jewel was in the cargo. Riding high in the back with my then 4-year-old son, a rugged, sweet beauty of a little brown boy in a navy blue NASA jacket and rain boots, the kind of little guy who could build complex Lego airplanes, work a transformer in minutes, and use a multisyllabic new word after learning it once. a mischievous charmer who could romance a pretty girl in his Batman gear and get the digits of his captivated mama with his conversational stylings and a flash of his killer smile. We had just come from one of our adventures at the, quote, waterfall, the landmark Oakland fountain that flows luminescent through redwoods and creek bed. We did our thing, having packed our adventure backpack with rope, binoculars, snacks, juice boxes, and something to scoop up river rocks. It was what my son deemed, quote, boy time at its finest. He and Dada hanging in the woods, jumping rocks, being dudes together. Never mind the gender requirements. It was our special time. We established our self-protection as we fought invisible bad guys lurking in the forest. We investigated nature as we gathered flat, smooth rocks and evaluated their colors and textures. And it was a time of immense wonder. Dada, how old are the redwood trees? How far away is the moon? As I turned off the engine, he asked simply in his high little voice, Dada, are you a man? I pocketed the keys and thought, cool, this is it. It was time to answer to that parental call of duty, teacher of life's mysteries and miracles, with a continuation of the pride conversation we'd initiated 6 months earlier about men who love men and women who love women, boys who feel like girls and girls who feel like boys. At the time, he contemplated the options and pronounced, I'm a boy who feels like a boy, and I'm a man who loves women. But this was me we were talking about, so I responded, sort of. I wasn't born a guy, but I feel like a guy. Were you born a girl? Yeah, but I think I'm a guy. I always have, but not everybody sees me that way. I noted my non-medically transitioned female voice and body as I spoke and considered how it might be confusing to him that people sometimes assumed I was his mama. He thought about it. People like me are called transgender. Can you say transgender? I asked. Transgender, he said, enunciating very well. I could see the wheels turning. Then his eyes lit up with the fire of a new wonder to behold. You're a transformer, but not exactly that. You're a person who transforms. That's right, I said, amazed at his ability to draw connections. Dada, there aren't that many people who are transgender. Yeah, but I know a lot of people who are. Mama's not transgender. You're way more like a man than Mama is. I'm not transgender. Yeah, because you're a boy who feels like a boy. I super love you. I super love you, mister. And he smiled that killer smile.
Such, I mean, just one of the really incredible stories in there. it really is. And then, you know, the thing that's so unique about this book, I think, also is that you use these moments in your life, which are really deeply personal and moving, as teachable moments where the storytelling comes first, and then often within a chapter, you will pull back and give folks the bigger picture. So you'll give people a societal and cultural context. You'll give people statistics about mental health, disability, access to healthcare, transgender rights, same-sex marriage. I mean, you cover a lot of ground, and you even include resources at the end of some of the chapters to direct folks to services and sometimes even a call to action to change the way things are.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, when you first imagined this project, if anyone sort of resisted this notion that you were going to do both a memoir and a cultural competency guide in the same book.
Well, you know, I had to do my own thing because, you know, I'm a trans person. I have to do my own thing. And, you know, I'm a mixed person. You know, I'm somebody who's never really fit in the categories neatly for anything, any of the communities I claim membership to, you know. And, you know, I just had to do it my way. And, you know, like me, it's multi-genre. There's poetry, there's creative nonfiction, you know, conventional memoir, there's, you know, some journalistic moments, right, as you mentioned. And so, you know, the statistics, and there's, you know, very deep personal storytelling. I had to do it my way. I worked with a wonderful editor, Brooke Warner, who is the former executive editor of Seal Press, who I think has edited more trans authors than anyone on the planet as an editor. And, you know, I worked with her as a coach, she does writing coaching, or she does editing, and she, you know, I basically was able to use her publishing team at She Writes Press to publish my book, because I knew that this was the best business model for me to hire editorial and publishing expertise. And also, I didn't want to have to sign away my rights to a publisher who would you know, decide what to put on the cover and edit all of the poetry out of my work, or change what I wanted to do. So that's how I did it. and so I didn't really have to go up against people telling me I shouldn't do it the way I needed to do it, because I knew I was going to do it how I was going to do it.
Which is kind of a recurring theme in the book, actually.
I guess so, yeah.
You know, one thing that I didn't know about you was one of the chapters in the book is this loving tribute to Christopher Lee, who was a groundbreaking Asian-American trans filmmaker. He produced the first trans porn movies back before anyone was doing it in
the 90s.
And I didn't even know that your worlds crossed, but in fact, he was the best man at your wedding, or you were the best man at his wedding.
No, I was the best. I mean, he was the best man at my wedding. Yes, okay. We were tight. Yeah, and we had, you know, this kind of an incredible demographic connection in that we were both mixed Chinese and Caucasian. We were both trans, masculine, and we were both living with the same debilitating chronic illness. And we supported each other through, you know, just being broke ass and being sick, and also just, you know, being who we needed to be in the world within an Asian queer community, in the larger, you know, queer community in the San Francisco Bay Area. We were tight at you know, at the time back in the 90s that I write about. And, I mean, he was a tremendous loss to our world. I really did want to talk about who he was as a wonderful, amazing person who started, you know, what was then called Tranny Fest back in the day when the word tranny was a term of empowerment in our community. And, you know, now the San Francisco Transgender Film Festival. And, yes, as you mentioned, wonderful filmmaker and just brilliant artist.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so nice to have that. It was like a little piece of history that just sprang up in the book. And for me, I was like, oh my God, so our worlds, my world has collided with Willie Wilkinson.
That's right.
It's just
That's in a really
unexpected way. Okay. We gotta take another break. Oh my God, that brings up so many more questions. So I'm going to have to gather my thoughts because I have about 17 more questions and I'm kind of feeling like maybe we won't get to them all, but stay with us, folks, because I've still got tons of questions for Willie, and as you can see, you're gonna get to hear some great stuff from this book, which you're all gonna go run out and buy and support, I hope. Okay, so let's take a break. More with Willie Wilkinson when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
No fluff. No lies. Just real women talking real sex.
I am so bruised on my girl bits.
Sex gets real.
Sex gets so real.
So real up in here.
A weekly podcast with Dawn.
I just masturbated.
And Dylan.
Let's talk about the elusive clit.
With sex news.
Here's the thing about this female Viagra.
Interviews.
We have Cooper Beckett with us today. Lance Hart. Amy Jo Goddard.
Listener questions.
You won't know until you sit down and have that conversation.
And Dawn and Dylan sharing their own experiences.
And he was just like sticking his tongue in there and trying to lick every crevice. It was awful.
Sometimes they share a little too much.
Ew, gross. Like, I don't even...
I'm telling you, that's why I got grossed out.
Check them out on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and at sexgetsreal.com.
So gross. Okay.
So gross.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many, for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Willie Wilkinson about this new book, which is part memoir and part cultural competency manual, called Born on the Edge of Race and Gender. I want to remind you that if you've got questions for me or comments about shows, you can call our 24-hour voicemail line, 323-SEX-8266, 323-SEX-8266. Of course, you can also post questions and comments on our Twitter feed. So one thing that you talked about before the break was, and also referred to in the piece about your son, was that there was a time that you were living as a trans person and you hadn't medically transitioned. But then at some point you came to decide to medically transition. So let's talk about what that means and how you came to that decision.
Okay. Since I was born in the early 60s, when I turned 18, medical transition was not an option. So I came out as a woman first, then as a lesbian of color, and I got to experience the lesbian of color movement of the 80s and the transgender movement of the 90s. But, when I came out and, the transgender movement was taking off in San Francisco in the 90s, I came out as trans. I mean, I always was trans, but it was a place for me to connect. And I really felt that my gender was inextricably linked to my mixed heritage, that I was a third-gendered person, that I wasn't sure that medically transitioning was the right thing for me. And I felt that at the time that either way, transitioning or not transitioning, wasn't totally congruent for me, but I decided to not medically transition, though, I mean, I circled around it for decades, really. And I was in a relationship with a femme lesbian who wasn't so excited about me medically transitioning for many years, and so that was part of it. But also I felt that for a long time that it wasn't the right thing for me, but it kept coming up. It kept coming up over and over and over again until finally in early 2012, so that's what, 4 years ago, I did finally take the plunge. And I'm very happy I did. But, I lived as a very non-binary identified person for a very long time and struggled to navigate being seen and understood for my gender long before anybody was saying they or putting their pronouns on their name tag or in their email signature, or announcing their pronouns in meetings and so forth. Ultimately I did medically transition. So
how, what did that look like for you? And tell me some of how that looked like for you, just to do some piece of education here, which I know is part of your spiel.
Well, I got access to testosterone, and I immediately, pretty much soon after I started hormones, I accessed top surgery, creation of a male chest. And that was very powerful for me. And I talk about navigating the locker room, coming right off of top surgery and just starting going to the men's locker room three months into medical transition. Ultimately, after a year of living as male, or a year of medical transition, and I started to get read as male fairly consistently outside of the Bay Area, and like 5 or 6 months into transition, and about 8 months in the Bay Area, I started to be read fairly consistently as male, and living as male, I started to really dream of what would it be like to be in the locker room and not be concerned about my safety. What if I, access phalloplasty and creation of a penis and be able to navigate a naked male space without, constantly worrying if I was going to get killed in the locker room. So that was certainly part of the drive for me accessing phalloplasty, which I did ultimately do in 2014.
Okay, so phalloplasty, or some people call it bottom surgery, although there's multiple, quote, bottom genital surgeries out there. And phalloplasty is the most expensive, the most intricate, and not one of the most widely chosen. So, and when you know, it's fascinating the way that you approach this in your book, because on the one hand, you have these very sweet scenes of like your kids visiting you in the hospital when you got your first surgery. But then you get like really technical and really specific and really real. And I found myself thinking, I have never read this much detailed information about phalloplasty.
Mm-hmm.
It was
There's so few people who actually know what happens with phalloplasty that I felt, you know, it was important to educate people about what I've learned along the way.
But you also didn't sugarcoat it. I mean,
I did not.
Yeah, I mean, there was a tremendous amount of pain and suffering for mm-hmm. you to achieve this kind of body congruity.
Yeah.
But there was this other piece of it, which I felt was really, first of all, I just felt it was fascinating that you like laid it all out in such specific ways, because I feel like it's this like area where we don't go, you know, and that's kind of a metaphor and a literal description, right? This area where we like don't talk about it in specific terms. And I think especially for non-trans people, we've been schooled that we are supposed to stop focusing on trans people's genitals because it's totally rude, inappropriate, and fucked up. And so putting it out there kind of for a general audience, I felt like was really brave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, don't ask any trans person about their genital status, but I'm willing to talk about mine because it's about healthcare access, and we need healthcare access across the board, nationwide and worldwide, and that's why we need to talk about. And also for me, I mean, this was a timely confluence of healthcare, our health insurance options changing in California, and technical expertise moving to San Francisco, the San Francisco Bay Area. You know, just an amazing surgeon who had the technical ability to create a very functioning penis. And I think, you know, in the trans community, you know, people think, oh, you know, there's not really a viable option to create a fully functioning penis, but actually that has changed. You know, I think people continue to have the misconception that, you know, it's a Franken-dick, and that is not the case. I mean, it's actually, you know, you can pee out of it, you can fuck with it, you can do whatever you need to do with it, and you can feel it. And
yeah, you have sensation. You have sensation from the shaft to the tip.
All the way, that's right. Yeah, I mean, and that's not a guarantee, but that is certainly the case for many people because the nerves are connected microsurgically, and it takes about 9 months for the nerves to grow in for you to be able to feel all the way to the tip. And then, you know, there's a series of stages, but, I mean, it's pretty amazing now what can be done in the first stage, and that you can create the penis and the urethra and the glands, the head, so that you, you know, it does look like a penis, you know, in one stage. And then later, depending on, you know, if you have any complications or not, then you get the next stage is the implant, so that you can achieve erection. You know, sometimes a lot of people do have complications, and part of the area that, I mean, and certainly what I talk about is having urethral stricture, which is a narrowing of the created urethra, and that can be very painful. And so I went through a process there of living in pain for a year and dealing with, you know, having a stricture, but which ultimately was fixed. But, you know, there's, you know, you can certainly get that repaired. I mean, you know, historically people went through 12 surgeries for a penis they couldn't feel. Now, you know, you can go for 2 surgeries or potentially more if you have complications and be able to feel it, pee through it, and, you know, like I said, have sex with it. So, you know, it's a whole new world, and if you're in one of the 12 states in the District of Columbia that has, you know, required insurance companies to cover transition-related surgery, it's something that's accessible for trans folks through health insurance, which is a new day, and everybody should have that.
And you make a point, as you're talking about all this, also about the fact that people don't talk about this, and the fact that the sort of common wisdom is that we can't really create a penis and it doesn't really work and people aren't really happy with the results, kind of casts this shadow over trans men's genitals and
right.
is really like degrading and demeaning.
Right, right. I think, you know, and I quote, you know, Shannon Minter, who writes in Hung Jury, which is an anthology of people writing about their experience with genital surgery, female-to-male genital surgery, as talking about, you know, in his work, you know, advocating legally for trans men to have their gender identity affirmed, he often had to describe genital surgery as inadequate. And he talks about having regret about that. And I feel that I had a similar experience in it as I'm advocating for healthcare access. You know, and that I think we've all been trained over the years to think of, oh, well, this is not an adequate surgery, and there's a way in which trans men are diminished as not having adequate genitalia. And I think we need to really look at that and how, you know, in a way we're, you know, speaking in such pejorative terms about a trans men's genitalia. And certainly, you know, no one needs a penis to be a man. You know, and there are certainly a lot of people who have no interest in genital surgery and are happy with the genitals they have. But for folks who are interested in getting a penis, I mean, there are options now. And so there's a whole movement of men who are accessing phalloplasty and finding support online and, you know, talking about, you know, the options and, you know, supporting each other through complications because, as is the case, as it always has been, you know, we educate each other because, you know, our healthcare institutions don't have health education departments designed for us for the most part, although that's starting to change. San Francisco Department of Public Health is doing great work in that area, and Kaiser is now starting to do that. But, you know, we've educated ourselves and we learn from each other.
And that's what part of, you know, it's clear part of your mission is with this book.
Oh, absolutely.
Is absolutely to educate each other and also a sort of larger world about this.
Well, yeah. I mean, the general public imagines that we all have surgery, you know, and there's kind of this, you know, idea that transgender equals surgery, when the reality is the vast majority of trans people have no surgery at all because it's not affordable, it's not accessible, you know, it's not covered by the health insurance if they have it, you know. But for folks in the trans community, you know, I think we've generally thought, oh, well, that's not going to happen in my lifetime. I don't have $100,000 laying around. You know, that's not going to happen. And, you know, I think that's starting to change for people, certainly for people in California and in other states.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break. There is more coming up. We've got to talk about, oh my God, we have so many things to talk about. We have to talk about disability and illness. We have to talk about being clocked as monoracial. There's so many funny, there's also some really funny shit in the book too, guys. Okay, so stay with us. More with Willie Wilkinson when we get back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights. And the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many, for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. We're talking with Willie Wilkinson, who is an award-winning public health consultant, writer, cultural competency trainer, and his new book is called Born on the Edge of Race and Gender. Before the break, he liked that little spot that I picked up about being seen in these multiple ways, and so Willie is going to read another little snippet from the book. Take it away.
Oh, okay. This is from a piece called Monoracial Bonding. And I get asked, you know, now that you're all male, are you going to be all Chinese too? But why would I go all monoracial? How would it even be possible to do that? I had never been understandable. I was coming and going at the same time. I was sir, ma'am, he, they, her. I was him until I opened my mouth. I was not Chinese and couldn't possibly know anything about it. I failed the qualification test for membership in all the groups I laid claim to. I was the epicenter of the confusion. I stepped over the line of exclusion. I was the exclamation point and the question mark.
I love this because there's so many stories in this book about the way that people perceive you. And you had a little list there. I also made a list myself that at various points in your life, in various situations, you have been read as white, Chinese, Japanese, of undetermined race, queer, straight, male, female, butch, trans, monoracial, biracial, lesbian mom, cisgender dad, vital, able-bodied, disabled, your wife's son, and the creator of the sperm that made your children.
And Native American and black on the phone. And I mean, you know, all kind of stuff. Yeah. Thank you.
So there's obviously a lot about identity in this book, and you're clear in your mind about yours, but what has it been like to navigate a world that seems so confused?
You never know when it's coming. You never know what's coming at you. I mean, and I thought as a non-medically transitioned person that, you know, that was really, that was mainly where I experienced, you know, being called sir and ma'am, you know, by two different people in the same store at the same time. You know, those kinds of moments where, you know, it's like, oh, should I cover my boobs and lower my voice and act like a dude, or should I, you know, like there were those moments as a non-medically transitioned trans person. But, you know, certainly as a mixed person, you know, I've been read in so many different ways. And you know, yes, as a person who lived with, has lived with a debilitating illness, being read as able-bodied but feeling sick as a dog, you know, I mean, it was just one more piece of the, daily mindfuck that I've experienced throughout my life. But that's quite the list you made, yes.
So for several years, you, like you said, you were severely debilitated by chronic fatigue immune deficiency syndrome, or CFIDS,
yes,
as well as multiple chemical sensitivities, and friends and community abandoned you. You were isolated at your sickest. You felt disregarded by people around you and by the system. And this was by far one of the most heartbreaking pieces in the book for me to read. You came into this identity as a disabled person, and you found a really cool queer POC disability community, and you give them great props and visibility in the book. You explored all sorts of treatment options. You didn't have very much luck. Then you found someone who attacked it kind of another way, and you came out of this period and began to feel better. And now you are swimming, you're raising three small children, you work all the time. So I'm wondering if you still identify as disabled, if you still struggle with complications from your illness.
I do. And, you know, I reached a point where I stopped identifying as having a disability, and then phalloplasty kicked my ass. I really started to experience more symptoms and reclaim my experience as a person with a disability. I mean, it's certainly something I have lived with all these years over the last 2.5 decades. And to varying degrees, I mean, you know, I thought I was dying for the first couple years and emerged from a very debilitating place to be much more functional, but it's certainly something that I continue to live with. I mean, and I have to say, you know, the queer people of color-centered disability justice movement that I discovered, you know, only happened like a year ago or so that I really realized, oh my God, you know, I really need to get connected to this movement and this community. But it didn't exist when I was at my most debilitated in the 90s, when there was no social media, you know, there was no way to connect other than to drag your body to a support group that you may or may not been able to get to, you know, because of health issues. And so it was certainly hard to find folks to connect with at that time. And now it's pretty amazing that there is a community online of folks really connecting and supporting each other.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think I'm very aware of the fact that CFIDS strikes more female-bodied people than male-bodied, and that there just isn't enough visibility and talk about it. I felt conscious. The incredible poet Peggy Munson, who I've known for decades, lives with CFIDS, and I felt like if I didn't bring it up, because it was a piece of this book, that I would be erasing that piece of you also in some way. So I wanted to talk about it, and I felt like, again, it seemed to be some of the most painful time for you as someone who was so steeped in community at all times that it seemed like that was the place where people were like, no, can't get with this.
Yeah, I think there was no cultural reference point for young people who were too sick to get out of bed. Even though, you know, this was during the time of HIV AIDS, you know, the HIV-AIDS crisis, really, and the movement in the, you know, 80s and 90s in San Francisco, but people really didn't understand CFIDS what was going on for a lot of lesbians at the time, you know, that were living with CFIDS. There wasn't the same energy, attention, and certainly not the dollars or services that HIV was you know, experiencing. It was very devastating to be working in the HIV/AIDS world in San Francisco and public health, you know, helping people in so many ways, and then experience this chronic illness and not be able to get support or understanding or services or even a hot meal delivered to my door. You know, and that's changed. You know, people can now access a hot meal, but, you know, there were very little resources at the time.
And we've got a question on Twitter. Diana asks, does Medicaid pay for trans surgeries?
Yes. Well, depending what state you're in California, Medi-Cal will pay for trans surgery, and that's a wonderful thing. But it depends on what state you're living in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's your answer to your question, Diana. It depends on the state. And that's why there's so many providers in California, and also an incredible waiting list for some of these services as well.
Yes. I mean, for a long time, Medi-Cal in California did say that they were going to pay for transition-related surgery, but their rates were so low that there was no surgery in the state of California who would perform transition-related surgery for Medi-Cal rates. That has changed. So in California, but there's certainly a lot of states that people are not getting covered by Medicaid.
So it's not a federal across-the-board Medicaid.
No, and it needs to be. And that's why I advocate for comprehensive care on a federal level.
Yeah, on a regular basis, you do.
That's
okay,
right.
So we're out of time, Willie Wilkinson. I got to tell people how to find you, how to get your book, how to see you in person, and then we got to go.
Okay, well, it's been such a pleasure.
Willie Wilkinson is the author of the new book, Born on the Edge of Race and Gender, A Voice for Cultural Competency. He's going to be doing readings and book signings in New York City, first at Dixon Place on Tuesday, February 16th, and then a reading and discussion with a book signing on February 17th at Blue Stockings in New York City. Blue Stockings is one of the most amazing bookstores in the world. Please go support them. Willie also does a ton of speaking on college campuses. He does transgender cultural competency training. He's been doing this for 3 decades. So you can also book him to speak at your college, your university, your organization, your company. Find out all about it at williewilkinson.com. He's also on Facebook and on Twitter at williewilkinson1, the number one. Because I guess Willie Wilkinson was taken. I don't know.
Yes, so. Yes, yes. Yeah, some dude who hasn't tweeted in like 5 years, but yeah.
Oh, my God. Okay, so thank you so much for being on the show and for writing this really important book.
Oh, thank you so much. Wonderful to speak with you.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, who brought this book to me and introduced me to Willie. And I'm forever grateful for that, Raymond. Segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. If you missed any part of the show or you want to hear it again, you can listen on demand or download the MP3 by going to voiceamerica.com and searching for Sex Out Loud. You can also subscribe to it as a podcast on iTunes, and you can give us a review on iTunes, which helps people find us. Tune in next Friday, same time, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be photographer and filmmaker N. Maxwell Lander. This is one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, and he has come out with a new photography book called Carnal Anomaly. We're going to be joined by both Maxwell and one of the models, in fact, the cover guy of the book, J.P. Robichaux, and we're going to talk a lot about representations of BDSM and violence in photography, in the media, in our communities. So it's going to be a really good conversation, and I'm really psyched. I just got the book in the mail, and it looks amazing, published by 3L Press. So until then, just visit me over at facebook.com/AskTristan, on our Twitter feed, at Sex Out Loud Radio. You can call our 24-hour voicemail and take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.